Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the multi-award-winning Rigbiz podcast. And as always, I'm John. Well, you say you're the greatest fly half in the world. You couldn't even get on the bench for Richmond on the weekend in the championship.
Fred, I'm still nursing a little niggle. And this week was away at Coldy in Liverpool. I'm not doing that. I think for me, you know, my debut should be here in Richmond. So hopefully, fingers crossed, next week I will be starting or on the bench. And really? I'm really looking forward to making an impact.
Well, we've got an old friend of yours on the show today who was a professional, played for Bath, played for Gloucester, played for England, played over in France. I mean, an absolute legend in the game. When was the last time you saw him? You guys used to be best pals, didn't you?
Yeah, so we've got my rugby hero, Ollie Barkley, coming in the podcast.
Sexy
I'm really
guy.
Excited. A guy I very much look up to. I've modelled myself on in many ways. I'm very excited. Saw him about 10 years ago. So looking forward to catching up and having some decent banter with him.
But did you have some loose nights together back in the days, I imagine?
We can get into that, I'm sure. Yeah, we did tear up Bath in a big way.
Okay. Sad news this week, though, in the rugby world. Obviously, Lewis Moody succumbing to MND seems to be a real problem. We're obviously going to touch on that with Barks. But your initial reaction, you've done a lot of charity work for MND.
Yeah, no, look, it's a horrific disease, and he was an absolute legend of a player, and he's certainly got a battle ahead of him, but look, he's still here, and, you know, we just wish him all the best. I mean, the rugby community will come together, and when the rugby community comes together, like a networking event in the net, you know, it's truly spectacular. So, you know, we just wish Lewis and his family and his friends, because it doesn't just affect... you know, Lewis, it will affect his family. And that's the thing you learn when you come across MND, that it's everyone close by that's affected. But
Well, a lot of work you did was obviously with Kenny Logan, a Scottish hero.
Yes.
And talking about Scotland, you were up there all week. I mean, we've all been slaying away down in London.
Yeah.
You're meant to be working the sea every day. What have you been up to?
Well, look, Fred, you know, one of my favourite things to do is get on the golf course. And I was up there with a few clients up at Trump Turnberry for a couple of nights. A little bit of lash and some bloody good golf. Had a whale of a time. Yeah. I mean, what a phenomenal place. Scotland is beautiful. I mean, it's very much like going to France. I had no idea what the locals were saying, but they seemed very nice. No, played really well there. Short of 65 both days. And the last day I had a caddy called Gary. Really good guy, actually. Again, struggled to understand everything he was saying. He only had one tooth.
Right, okay.
But he was bloody handy. And actually, off the back of that, he came back with me to London. And he's sort of going to caddy for me in the city. Well, I'm going to teach him the ways of the city. I mean, look, he was great at telling me, look, you're about 170 yards to the pin. You probably need your 7-iron, or you want to play a shot that's playing 180 into the wind. And that kind of advice is what I kind of need. Now, I'm not going to be playing golf in the city. Obviously, outside the city, I'll take him to the golf courses. But, you know, it'd be quite handy to send him down on the Northern Line just to find me a spot, you know, a good spot to get on the tube. I think he can go ahead for me in meetings and prep them. So, yeah, Gary's living with me now. So I've got Gary, I've got the nanny, and I've got Johnny John. It actually is really nice.
It's a weird dynamic to have.
No, it's like being back at uni or when I first moved to London. It's like a house share. There's different characters, different dynamics. It's a lot of fun.
Right. Well, just before we get on the greatest fly half in the world, Mr. Ollie Barkley, we should say that there's another thing we want to touch on because you've got a new section.
Yes.
Talking about England legends.
Yeah, yeah.
Ex-England captain. Is he your content creator of the week?
Well, yeah, we got a brand new section this week. It's content creator of the week. Can we play the jingle?
We can.
Oh, that's brilliant. So each week we're going to find someone creating great content online and we're gonna highlight them and their great work. This week it goes to our really good friend, good lad.
Love him.
So good in person, Chris Robshaw.
Oh my God.
And you've got to check out this video, Fred. It's him. Obviously, Chris is doing really well in Strictly Come Dancing. I think he just comes across as a great guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the one show host. Anyway, here's a video.
He is packed for the personality.
Here's a video of Chris and his partner. And this is my favorite video of Chris. Let me just get it up for you. This is Chris. It's brilliant, isn't it? He's a natural. He's so good.
Is he still in it?
Just let this video play. It's brilliant. So there it is. Chris Robshaw, our content creator of the week.
Well, we are now delighted to be joined by England's greatest looking fly, well, maybe after Wilkinson and Cipriani and Sladey when he stood in. So fourth greatest looking fly half, but one of the best ever, Ollie Barkley.
I'll take that. I'll take fourth.
You're looking glorious.
Thanks, mate.
Great new little glasses as well. I like the change up.
43 years.
This is a real honour for me because Ollie Barkley, aka Barks, is one of my heroes. When I was coming up in the ranks and considering playing pro, you know, I looked at Barks, I looked up at him and thought, yeah, that's the kind of guy I want to be. Good looking, had a lot of flair, was good with ball in hand, but also was decent, you know, kicking as well. So look, it's a real honour, Barks, to have you here. this is, I don't want to get emotional.
You're getting emotional.
Yeah, I am a little bit. Yeah,
have you watching the line videos again?
no, I haven't had any girls back, so no.
Well, you say good ball in hand, he was, but also defensively. I mean, there was that one famous game when you took out the transvestite pitch inverter. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'm not sure taking out transvestites in a dead ball situation could constitute as decent defence, but...
No, true.
It's definitely the thing I'm probably most well known for is that situation. But that interesting story around that, because I actually knew that bloke. Nobody knows that. Do you want to get into it?
Yeah, please.
See, we'd lost the game at that point and the game was dead. And then Little Miss Muffet, right? Little Miss Muffet? Yeah. Little Miss Muffet? Yeah, came on the field and...
quite hot.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, decent pair of legs on him. And he went for Carl Ferns and didn't want to do that. So then he came to something slightly lighter and came to me. And as I'd move forward to tackle him, I realised I actually knew him and his name was Luke Footy. He went, all right, Bucks. But I'd already committed to the tackle at that point, so I couldn't pull out. So I ended up putting him on his back, which actually wasn't as easy as I thought it would be. He was pretty pissed. He was on a stag do, actually, with a bunch of other guys that I knew from UIC. I knew them because my brother went to UIC. They're on a stag do. I was like, literally, then I was on top of him and I was like, oh, fuck, sorry, Footy. But then he got ejected from the stadium. This is not funny, but it is funny. He got ejected from the stadium straight after that. And then as they like pushed him to like leave, he broke his ankle. So he got ejected from the stadium, dumped his back, ejected from the stadium, then broke his ankle and spent the whole night in A&E and then did his wedding in a car. So it wasn't a great night for him.
Jesus. Well, that teaches you. Don't fuck with Bob.
What was his name?
Luke Foot.
I've got to connect with that guy on LinkedIn. That's legendary. What a good lad. I thought you'd get arrested. I thought that's what happened.
Well, you
pitch and bed, you get arrested. Is that not true?
That
makes me think I'm going to probably do a bit more pitch and bed.
You should do.
Yeah, there's just
your only chance to get on a professional pitch.
I've never seen anyone get arrested for my. I've actually seen some guys do it at the record. They just get put back in their seat.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I say crack on.
Well, we're talking about the days at the rec. You and Archie used to be great mates. You were great mates with Benders, right?
Yeah.
Back in the Bath days. Did you guys have some good nights? I mean, Archie's been saying the last 5 years, mate, this night out with Barkley. Have you ever met him before?
No, it's the first time.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, I was around. Like, what I'd do is I'd go down with the boys and we'd watch Bath at home. And then normally the Bath boys would go to All Bar One and we'd hang around. I mean, Bath boys would remember it, but a few times, like you, Flats, you'd walk past me and I'd be like, all right, boys. And you would like give me the nod, but I look different. I've lost a lot of weight. I've got a lot better looking.
Yeah. I think as you come up the ranks, I think maybe started to notice you a bit more, mate.
Yeah. I mean, I was a young whippersnapper then. I mean, probably Bendy didn't go into too much detail, but I was responsible for a lot of, you know, his career and how he developed. But I used to go down to Rec a lot and I spent a lot of time looking at Ollie.
Yeah, he said that you guys were mates.
Yeah. No, we are kind of mates now.
You are.
Yeah, he follows me on Instagram.
Yeah. You were obviously great mates with Lewis Moody, club captain, England teammate, Bath teammate. Shocking news which came in, you know, last week now about his diagnosis with MND. Just your thoughts on that. And also, so many rugby players going down with it. I mean, it must be quite a terrifying thing to be surrounded by.
Yeah, mate, it is. It's like the last few years have been sort of very well documented, really, really, really sadly, obviously with Doddy and then Rob Burrows as well. And now Mudos, just coming out of it at the start of the week. So it's a tough one. I think it's still like a lot of people still processing it. I left him a message at the start of the week and didn't really want to text him. It just didn't really feel right. So I left him a voice note. It's hard, you know. It's like Mudos is like, for you guys that know him, he is one of the most effervescent, courageous, he is one of the good guys. Like, there are a lot of guys go through rugby, there's a lot of good guys, there's not so good guys, there's a lot of great people, and he is more genuinely one of the great people. He's brave, he's always there for the team, like he puts the team first at every possibility, and he was a joy to I only play with him probably 10 times for England and then with Bath for a couple of seasons. But yeah, man, it's tough. Like, if him and Annie and the boys, it's going to be a, you know, they're confronting a lot at the moment. But I said this to him in an obvious note, like, if anyone's going to take this challenge courageously and do it with pride and with gusto, then like, it's him. You know, he's an absolute trooper, and I'm sure he will show the same attitude through this as he has done through his career.
Do you think something like this does kind of bring people together? Because I know, like in rugby, like it is kind of, you finish your career and the boys kind of go separate ways. Obviously, you stay in contact with a few people, but you know, even people you're close with, you don't see a lot. Do you think something like this does bring people together? And that's kind of, you know, this kind of moment will galvanize people to come together and do something pretty special. Do you feel that right now?
Yeah, mate, I really, really do. And actually, funny you say that, like, I didn't want to say it at the time because it was a bit off kilter, I thought, but like, I thought of an idea where we come up with a challenge and we bring back like all the old Bath teams, all the old Leicester teams, all the old England teams that Millers played with, and there's like 100, 200 of us like all doing something together. And I think this situation, rugby in these moments have the power to do that, you know. Yeah. Like, rugby sounds cheesy, but it is a community that like gives a fuck.
Yeah,
it really is. You know, it's not just, it doesn't just say that, you know, oh, we'll be here, we'll be there. Like when this stuff like happens, people rally. And I think if anyone's going to create a situation where there is a beautiful rallying of support and, you know, and charity and fundraising, it will be Mudos and it'll be the situation.
Yeah.
I think it's worth saying that, if you're watching this, you can head to like organizations, My Name's Doddy's Foundation, for Ed, and you can just donate. I don't think sometimes people just wait around for a challenge, and actually, you know, you can just go and donate now. And as little as £5 can actually help to go towards, you know, they're trying to find a cure that, you know, is much needed. And it goes not just to a cure, it goes to like families who are dealing with it. Because yeah, it isn't just the person that having the disease, it's the families around it that have to deal with the support, everything like that, facilities, that is life-changing. So
it is. The families is a big one, right? I mean they all go through it. But, you know, at some point, you know, sadly, the families are going to be there fending for themselves. And yeah, it's important, as you said, mate, that these times now are heavily supportive. It was, even this thing about following Mudos, and when these things start to happen, is sharing it, following it, getting involved in it. Like, these things can gather weight if everyone gets behind it quite quickly. And I'm sure there'll be some stuff coming out on his Insta soon.
Yeah, no, I mean, don't want to labour the point, but I do think like it's really important. Like as much as following Lewis Moody right now on Instagram just raises awareness, it pushes his story out there. So, you know, I think it's just pushing a button. But the more people that follow him, the more coverage he's going to get. The algorithm does his thing. So it's little things you can't donate, then follow his story and try and, you know, support him as much as possible.
I mean, lots of diagnoses coming out. Do you think this could spell the end of rugby in a couple of years? I mean, it's not one, it's hundreds of people who are joining a court case against the RFU.
I'm actually quite strong opinions about this, but no, I don't think that'll happen. I think they're trying to change the laws now, as we all know, to a point where it makes the game, in inverted commas, safer. But like, it's tough, right? Like rugby became a beautiful sport because it's, for want of a better term, brutal, and it's gladiatorial, and it's challenging, and it's like people wince in the crowd and they wince at home on their couches. And that's kind of what people sign up for, really, when they watch it. It's like, there's nothing else like it, like American football and stuff like that, but that's, you know, protected. It's very tough because you get involved in rugby understanding that you're going to go head on head, you're going to go bone on bone in a lot of situations, and that does bring with it like huge risks. And what's happening is incredibly sad. And I think the questions have to be asked, like, are the governing bodies doing enough to protect us, as in the player group? If they are or they aren't, then that's the question. Like, if they aren't, then they have to be made accountable. But if they are and they're trying and funds are going into it and time's going into it, the right amount of time, the right amount of funds, then, you know, they are arguably doing all they can. If they're not doing all they can, and I don't know who adjudicates if they are or they aren't, that's a different matter. But I think just to say, like, for me, like, this is your fault, I don't think is entirely fair. I think, are they doing everything they can to make this better, to put it right, to learn and adjust? If they are, and I don't know the answer to that question, if they are, let's accept the responsibilities that come with a really, really brutal sport. But if they're not, then different story.
Yeah. We turn to the rugby pod.
Yeah, well, this is...
Sorry, I'm serious.
No, was it? I mean, I actually, Barks, I don't want to get in an argument. I have a very different opinion to Barks. I mean, I personally think this will be the change of rugby, and I think they're going to move to a touch rugby league. And I think that's where I'm really going to come into my element.
You're finally going to get a cap.
If I'm playing touch on the comment, like generally, I covered up, and I think I can see where, you know, DAZN come in and it's, you know, live from Clapham Common Touch League. And I probably add a couple of more years to my career.
Yeah. Well, you made the rugby trainer look amateur in that, didn't you?
The rugby trainer. Yeah. I played with him. Yeah. Who is he? I mean, average player. I mean, he's doing well, but I carved up with him.
Well, talking about a talented player in the actual right form of rugby. We're sat opposite, you know, a great one here. Over 20 caps for England, genius for Bath and many other clubs. But I want to start with your debut because you were such a talented prodigy that you made your international debut before you made your Bath debut.
Yeah.
19, you're out in San Francisco. You can't legally drink out there. Take us through that, like, day that and that night.
It was quite weird because I went to that tour straight from New Zealand where I was on a gap year.
So I did mine in Canary Wharf, which
you know all about, mate. Playing for the team over there. And when I got to Penny Hill Park to fly to America with the rest of the team, I knew who everyone was, obviously, because they were all well-known rugby players and no one had a clue who I was. So I was like, what are you doing here? Like, how did you get here? I was like, well, I don't actually know. Like, I was put in the development squad before I left. And then Clive emailed me to say that we're taking a development tour. And I was like, this is all a bit weird, but cool. I'm up for it. And then just played well through the tour. Was like naive, like just didn't really care too much, didn't really think about it too much, and ended up playing pretty well. And then got into the test squad, and then got on against America. I went from like playing, I literally went from playing on a park, like Marist, when I played for Marist, they literally played on a park with like guys walking their dogs and stuff on the side and picnics on the side. 8 weeks previous to like wearing an England jersey in America. It was pretty mad.
Crazy.
And then came home and then, kind of went, just kind of things plateaued a bit. And like adjusting to life in the Premiership was very difficult. Like the Premiership's very, very different to playing against America, with all due respect.
Well, that's interesting because in many ways, I've got something similar in terms of the business world, because I went from being in my boarding school room just to, like, pretending to have phone calls with people, just practicing in the mirror, you know, just say, oh, hi, Mr. Johnson, how are you? I hope I've caught you a good time. But no one's on the other line. Yeah. I was just practicing. And then I did my gap here in Canary Wharf. And the next thing I know, I'm at my godfather's company. I'm actually making a call to a guy called Mr. Johnson.
Exactly.
And I guess where the difference is with Barks is you went like that and sort of like down to Premiership. I just went up because the city works like that. You come in at like a short basic salary and then you just keep going up. It's very rare you take a drop in salary. So, I mean, similarities. But then I guess like that's why I didn't go down the pro rugby route, because it is so up and down. You can have good contracts, you have bad contracts, whereas the city is a steady sort of incline.
Yeah, it's just parabolic, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I love that word. Yeah. I love that word, parabolic. Yeah. Funny enough, I used that 3 times yesterday.
Great.
Weirdly. I had a good day yesterday. I don't know if you have those days, but I woke up yesterday and I just had so much action on my LinkedIn. A lot of people checking my profile. So it gave me a sort of a hop and a skip in the day. You know, I wake up and I say, oh God, I've had 42 people check my LinkedIn profile. It's only 7:30 in the morning. I'm on the way to the tube. A lot of them are like from, like, it doesn't matter where they're from. They're not from England. They're, some guy from Bangladesh reached out to me about doing like an internet project, but I don't have anything to do with internet.
Well, mate, it's worth looking into.
Anyway.
When you were in America, obviously you're on tour with legends, people you've grown up watching. Did you have to share a room with any of them? I mean,
yeah.
Go on.
Initially, Alex King was my first roommate. And then, I'll tell you how to tell the story. And then I was actually quite nervous because I used to look up to Alex King. So we were in a twin room together. And I was like, I don't want to say to him. I don't know that. Watched him for ages for years on TV. Went downstairs to call my mum. Like what you do as an 18-year-old kid, you don't know what to do. And Simon Shaw comes down and he says, what are you doing? And I was just calling my mum. Right, he goes, don't come for a walk. And I was like, yeah, cool. I was like, mum, Simon Shaw said I want to go for a walk, so I've got to go. So I'm like, and we walked and he didn't say much to me. We're actually good mates now, so he, If he hears this, he'll laugh. But he didn't say a lot to me. He always doesn't say an awful lot sometimes. And then we went, literally ducked into this like thing and took me into my first strip club. It was like 4 in the afternoon in Toronto. It's like a Wednesday. Yeah, I'd never been to one. Genuinely, I turned up and these like baggy trousers, this Gap t-shirt. They had a Gap across the front, and remember those Merrell slip-ons?
Yeah, yeah.
Tragic,
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Tragic. Right, Shawzy's like, he's a grown man. He's wearing what grown men wear, and he goes into the strip club and just like dominates. Like everyone's just dripping over him, and I'm this little 18-year-old kid like. Like, I don't have a fucking clue what to do with myself. Like, do I say hello to someone? Do I get a drink? Do I get an alcoholic drink? Because I'm on tour. Like, what do I do? And I don't have a fucking clue what to do. Long story short, he brings back these two girls and then like, and just have his dance with them. And then they give it to him for free because he's Shawzy and he's smooth. And I'm just like, literally just like, don't know what to pay them. So I'm just like hanging over like all my money. I was on $5,000 a year at that point. So I think it was a question sport question. I was the lowest paid England player ever. I was on $5,000 a year when that happened because I'd just come from New Zealand. So I literally had no money. So like, I was almost rationing myself each month. So like, and I did my whole monthly budget in the strip club on a Wednesday. So that was my first day on tour with Shawzy, and Shawzy and I have been mates ever since. And he always comes back to that moment.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. But it was,
what about initiation? Did they make you do one or not after that first gap?
No, they're always quite light, actually, like England ones.
Who was on that tour? Was it like Delalio, Shawzy?
No, it was there was a Lions tour. There was a Lions tour on at the same time. So all the really big hitters were in Australia at the time.
Okay.
And then the first tour I went on with those boys was probably 2006 when we went to New Zealand. But there was a guys like Lewis Moody broke through then, Joe Worsley broke through. Jamie Noon started breaking through.
Flatman, was he on the tour?
Flats was on the tour.
Yeah, what a guy.
Shoots was on that. Yeah.
Well, two years later, obviously that famous 2003 World Cup victory, you weren't in the squad, but you were in the training squad, right? In the build-up to that World Cup, the wider squad, weren't you?
No, not 2003. We did 2007 World Cup, and then I was in the subsequent ones, and then unfortunately had some injuries at bad times. But the first, I was in the Six Nations after the World Cup, but I kind of broke through during the World Cup in the Premiership. Yeah. And then went from
there. So you had like a 3-year break from your debut until you basically got back in.
Literally, I mean, to be fair to the selectors and to be fair to like the situation, I took me that long to trying to customise to rugby really in the Premiership.
Do you think now when you look at where rugby is now and like with social media, do you look back and think you obviously played at a great time where you could be loose? Like we've had so many ex-pros who say like it was a great time, no camera phones, no nothing. It was extraordinarily loose. No one could capture it. But do you also like regret like the opportunities? Do you think you would have enjoyed it? Like having social media, like all that like Henry Pollitt, for instance, because you were sort of the equivalent of like a Marcus Smith, Henry Pollitt breaking through. You know, you're a good looking guy like me. You know, you'd have attracted a lot of followers. Do you look at that and think you like could have been an amazing opportunity, or are you glad you played in the era you played in?
Mate, I am genuinely I'm glad for the latter. Like I think that I probably misbehaved quite a bit when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I think that I would have been in quite a bit of trouble if there'd have been camera phones and it could move as quickly as it moves now. I was young. Would I have adjusted and maybe not, but I we had a great time when we were playing. And I think that when I started to retire, that's when it started. People started to have to be way more conscious of it, even if something as small as just like when you go past three or four beers and you get a bit loose-lipped or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just you have to hold yourself way more accountable now because there's a chance that it could move very, very quickly through the internet.
Do you think it's like it's a good thing that you were in Bath and not like a London club? Because you see, like, you know, we've had like Saki on here, we've had Delalio, we've had
Shawzy.
We've had Shawzy on the podcast. Like they're always London guys. It seemed like it was a different level in those days. Like Bath, you're kind of away from it. Obviously you can get to London. Do you think that was a good thing or
yes and no. I think the London obviously has way more opportunity to go out and have fun and misbehave, yeah. But Bath, as you know, mate, Bath's a goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
Everyone knows everyone. It's very small. It's one of four places you can go to. And rugby there is a really big deal. Like, people, like, the city loves its rugby. It's a big part of the city. You know it really well from, mate, from being with Nico. Like, it's a huge part of what goes on in that city. And on a game day, like, the whole city revolves around the Wreck. So that brings with it a level of, you know, attention and spotlight, which it sometimes is not that helpful.
Yeah.
It isn't particularly pleasant sometimes, but part of it. I think the London thing, you do have opportunity, you'd have more opportunity to do things, but you've also got, by and large, unless you're Low or perhaps Saki, like, you've got a bit of anonymity here because there's much bigger fish.
That's it. It's a little bit like Clapham in a way, because, you know, Clapham is a goldfish bowl and it does revolve around rugby. It revolves around, you know, the city. And with that, I find myself getting a lot of attention. I go down Northcote Road, I'll be in Whole Foods and, you know, someone's taking a photo of me. Yeah. Well, I was buying some cheddar cheese.
You have Whole Foods on Northcote now?
Yeah. I have a Whole Foods just up by the junction. The Great Whole Foods. And I was just buying some cheddar cheese and someone was trying to sort of give me a bit of chat about that. And I had to explain to him. I was like, "No, mate, there's protein in it. Okay. You don't look too much into it." And yeah, it's my guilty pleasure. I do like a slab of cheddar cheese.
Macros,
isn't it? These people don't understand. So would I benefit from living somewhere like North London, Islington? Yeah, there'd be more anonymity and people wouldn't, but then they wouldn't get the chat.
You wouldn't be the king of the castle.
So it's different, isn't it? Because I do enjoy the attention. On a night out, I'm in a nice V-neck, I'm wearing some nice trousers, no socks, some Birkenstocks, and, you know, girls are giving me attention. I'm like loving life. But, you know, if I was in, you know, let's say I'm out in Angel, would I get the same attention? No.
I'm not sure about touch leagues up there either, mate. It would probably change up. We'd have to try and take on a new sport. And I don't know how that would work out.
Yeah, maybe I would just be purely paddle. Purely paddle. 100%
paddle.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love paddle.
Talking about being naughty in your 20s, there was like this amazing sort of continuous turning 10 shirt post Johnny Wilkinson, you, Sips, Vuddy, Hodgkins, loads of people. Sips was a naughty boy in his 20s as well. Did you guys have a bit of beef? Like, were you friends? What was that like? Because you were always in competition with like so many 10s every single week.
Yeah. Do you know what? Everyone gets on really, really well. It's quite boring to say, but everyone gets on really well. Sips was, was very well documented, and he was someone that didn't have that huge amount of anonymity in London when he went out. But I think his relationships probably assisted how that moved virally through the internet, for sure. We all got on really, really well. It's just really boring, but yeah, we got on really well. I think Sips and I would stay in touch every now and then. The Wasp boys and the Bath boys always got on pretty well. We felt we were actually quite similar in personality-wise.
But what was that pressure like? Every time you rock up to play an England game, you play 23 times, you don't know if the shirt's going to be yours the next week.
To be honest, mate,
this is hard hitting. You are like a young Piers Morgan. This is unbelievable.
To be honest, you probably like... I mean, all honesty, like, you generally feel like you're probably keeping it warm for Johnny anyway. By good right, you know, he was outstanding for England for many, many years. And when he was playing well, he was fit, like, he was definitely the best player in that jersey, I think. Then they brought Charlie Hodgson in, who was also a fantastic player.
What about when Goody played? That must have been a piss take to you. You're like, fuck, you look at the size of him, you're like, fucking hell.
Don't speak badly about Andy Goody, okay? Because me and him are about to start a programme for GB News. It's going to be, it's like Jonathan Ross on GB News, but me and him have come together.
Just interviewing far-right candidates.
Far-right people, yeah.
That's going to go well.
All right, it's going to be a really big episode.
Sorry, carry on.
The answer is you kind of, you know, you felt, unless you had absolutely blinder for a successive period of games, that you were kind of keeping it warm for Wilco anyway. So how the back line was formed over that time changed because the coaches changed, defences changed. As a result of that, the personnel changed massively as well.
But just because we're doing a hard-hitting interview here and I'm going to hit you with a big question, but do you think you lived up to your full potential? Like, do you look back on your career now and... feel like you got everything, you squeezed everything out of rugby in terms of like rugby, but international rugby. Do you think you should have played more? Do you feel like you were like it was unfair?
I don't think I should have played more all the time. I think like I definitely didn't get the most out of my international career that I probably should have done or could have done. I think I only have myself to blame for those lost opportunities.
Yes, you do.
I think, thanks, mate.
We'll talk about it in your 1-to-1 next week.
Yeah, cheers. Do afterwards.
But was that to do with, like, do you think that was to do with you, like a mental side of it? Or do you think there was, there was something there that was blocking you? Like,
I think there's only one instance I can think of where I was unfairly not picked was the Australia tour in 2010 when I'd had one of the best seasons and then went away. And then Shaun-Tane Harper was picked ahead of me, who hadn't played at Bath all season.
Yeah.
Which Shaun-Tane's a great player, but he hadn't played all season. He was on the bench. So it kind of, that was felt unjustified, but that was like three or four caps. The rest of it, I think, you know, whether it was form or I got moved out of the squad on one occasion because I had an altercation off the pitch,
yeah.
which was fairly well documented, which cost me my Six Nations place and my tour place.
Who was that with? Those who don't know.
Who was the altercation with? Yeah. It was with a group of boys down in, so embarrassing, group of boys down in Newquay.
What, yeah, just giving you
chairs? On a night out, yeah. It was a fight that ended up being a pathetic little argument between a friend of mine and a guy in Burger King of all places, which ended up spreading out. They were just giving me shit about rugby, and he defended me, and then they ended up getting into a fight, and then I got brought into it. No, it was just, this fight just moved, and there was about a few of us and about five or six of them, and we ended up getting covered in CS gas. Yeah, on this car park, which was pretty pleasant.
That's actually one of the initiations for the Clapham Falcons. Yeah,
love that.
Yeah, well, they've got to learn.
Yeah, absolutely, man. No holds barred. That stuff's ruthless. So yeah, we got put in a cell for the night, and then it got released about 2 days later on Daily Mail.
But it's so annoying, right, Barks, when you go out with people who get so loose and so drunk and just start like trouble everywhere. I can't imagine.
Oh, mate.
Can you imagine what those people are like?
Yeah,
I know. And you're spending your youth coming over to going like, can you control your mate? And you're like thinking, yeah, well, I don't know what that's like, but I can only imagine.
It's so funny because my mate Nico's got a friend who was just like that, and he looked a lot like you, and he used to behave that way, but it was a fucking nightmare. But
sounds like a real troublemaker. Couldn't handle his booze and got carried away.
Talking of revolutions, 2007, everything's going to shit. We get absolutely destroyed by the South Africans in the group stage. Suddenly Brian Ashton's being pressed up against the wall, proverbially, by the old England boys, including yourself. What happened in that room? It's still one of the great sort of mysteries.
It is a mystery, because I was just saying to you before the podcast, I will say, I'm on the corporate circuit now. Watch out, Dave Flatman. I'm coming for your brown envelopes. But I was doing a gig up in Harrogate, which is far too north for me, with George Shooter, who's, again, a great guy. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in a comedy store soon. Anyway, and he was saying, he spoke so highly of you, Ollie, and about that time where you lost the game. And he generally was like, you were part of that leadership group that brought the boys together. Which, I mean, I don't know you that well, but I wouldn't imagine you were that kind of character. Not in an insulting way, I just didn't know you were that kind of person that would bring everyone together and lead. Because you think about the big characters in that squad, like Delalio, Wilkinson was there. But obviously it was you, Wilkinson, and...
Mike Catt.
What was it like?
We played in America in the first game, which we won, but they were respectfully not the strongest team. And then we got to South Africa and got found out by the eventual winners, but to be like very, very, very far off the pace. And it got to a point there, a few of us were quite concerned about how little structure we had to fall back on. At that point in time, like, defences were definitely changing, as I said, and people were going from a drift, that's getting very noisy now, from a drift defence, which is very easy to attack against, to people thinking like, the rush defence is now a real weapon and people are starting to use it, but it cut down how you attacked as a team, so you had to really adjust on how you did things. And we spent a lot of time doing exit strategies, which, for want of talking too much shop, is about how you get out of your own 22.
Yeah, that's how you get out of your 22, Karen. He won't understand.
You'd know all about that, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it came to a game, like, we didn't really have a huge amount of structure to fall back on. Mm. Playing loosely and, you know, front foot is fine when you have a defence going backwards, but when you don't have that, like, what do you do? So we basically came together as an attacking group, like a senior attacking group, and we're like, look, are we all clear? We know exactly how we're attacking here at the moment. And we kind of didn't get a very, very unified room, which was difficult for everyone because you kind of got to say in front of the coaches, what's been done at the moment hasn't been that clear to us or could have been clearer. So we then spent the next week or two trying to basically spread our attack out so we were less predictable rather than being able to chuck a blanket over like all 15 of us in a space of 30 meters, which wasn't a quick fix, but you've got like 30 players there that are all pretty sharp, know what they're doing. So we then went to Samoa and then looked much better against Samoa and then booked to Tonga and then we started to just gather momentum. Wilco kicked like an absolute beast. But
Bron Ashton was then, he was removed from the group. But that's what Shoot said. It was just basically, the whole coaching staff went and it was like you guys leading it, right?
Yeah, what happened in the room?
In the room, it was...
You challenged him. He said you challenged Bron Ashton.
Yeah, we challenged coaching squad to be where is our structure? What are our North Stars and attacking team here? What are we trying to do? And what happens if this happens? What happens if that happens? Like, do we have structure and order to fall back on? And we didn't. We just didn't have that. So, and that was evident in how we played against Africa.
Were you pissed off?
Yeah. We were all quite annoyed because we actually felt like we hadn't had the right amount of time delegated across the whole game plan.
Yeah.
It was very focused in one area or a few different areas. And we got to against big teams and we were found wanting when we couldn't pull out individual moments. So it was tough in that room. And I don't think I did myself a huge service. I think there are senior players in there that had carried a lot more weight than I did in the team. Wilco, Lowell, Catty. And I think I probably didn't help myself.
Why do you think that? Because I think like the way that Shoots talked about you the other day, he spoke with like admiration. I think like that's quite an admirable thing to do. Stand up and like say something, than rather just not say anything and put your head down.
I think the players all really appreciated it. I don't really know how the coaching staff felt about it.
Fuck Ashton.
We've only got 10 minutes left. We need to keep going.
It is
fascinating. Could I just say, off the back of that, I don't know if all of you guys know that, but I bought the rights to the film. So it's going to be your story.
No, just that night.
It's Ryan Gosling's going to play a guy from Bath. He's done remarkably well. Lawrence Dallo, I don't know. Got to find someone who's really good at smoking and can play a good rugby player.
Stay up all night.
Yeah, I imagine like Lawrence at the back like that. Yeah, Brian, we're changing the things.
After 6 years with Bath, the year later, 2008, you join your rivals Gloucester. Must have got a lot of shit. You were gone within the year. What happened?
Mate, when I didn't play well is the first thing I'd add up to. And then I think that the whole squad was pretty unhappy that time. I think we had one of the most belting squads in the whole league, but we just didn't perform. We came up 10th, I think, or 9th or 10th. Performed really badly. And I got really well with Dean and just went to him and said, mate, I'm not particularly happy here. Would you allow me to leave in the season? And he said, you know, he was very grown up about it. He said, I don't want you to go, but if you do want to go, then I don't want to have anyone here that doesn't want to be here. If you go to another club for more money and you're going there as a mercenary to earn more money, then I'll put a block on it. But if you're going to go back to Bath because you want to be happy, you can go. Okay. And I said that's all I want to do.
I remember that news as well because I it's when Sky Sports News came through. I shed a tear. But we didn't have social media at that time. So I just tried to send emails to Oliver Barkley, Ollie.Barkley, all the different hotmails. But I don't know if you got that. No, it's certainly quite a long email just saying, thanks for coming back.
Cheers, man. I'll check the job.
I'm still in contact with an Oliver Barkley, but he is based in the San Francisco area.
Right, what's he do?
He's a 48-year-old waiter. He's trying to make it in Hollywood. A really good guy. Does send me some weird photos, but he's really into fitness. Okay. And so we compare
each
other's
bodies. That
wasn't
the guy you used to sit on the stakes for, was it?
No, that's the old guy. No, I don't want to go into that.
You then moved to France, you know, a couple of years later, Racing Metro. Was that, well, maybe not as depressing as going to Grenoble, but like that whole French experience, a lot of people we speak to on the show go like, you get out there, it's 10 years behind. They're drinking wine at training. What craziness did you see out there?
Yeah. The stories are all true. Yeah, it's a different world.
What did you see?
I remember the first time we did lengths. First thing, no one really spoke to me because I didn't speak French at all. So I had to learn French very, very quickly, which as a 10 was a problem. And I remember the first time realizing this is really different is we were waiting to get down. The pitch session was starting at 9 o'clock in the morning, and like 8:45. I'm like, fuck, no one's moving. And then it's like, I'm going to go downstairs and get changed because the pitch session is really soon. And this like box of baguettes comes in. It's like warm baguettes. You can see them steaming. And they're like, and I'm like downstairs. And these like half a team are like cracking these baguettes, layering them with like butter, dipping them in their coffee. It's like 5 to 9. And I'm like, I'm just going to go down and get my boots on. And they're just up there. And then they roll in the pitch like 10:09, 9:15. Like you get a written warning in England if you did that. But they're just so chilled. And then the other one that cracked me up was, when we did pitch lengths, like on a Monday or Tuesday, a bit of fitness, the experienced like front row lads, some of which were playing for France at the time, they would go up the end. When the young lads were up near them to do the pitch lengths with them, they'd tell them to fuck off. Like, no, don't come near us. Basically, like we're up here to cheat. And if you're up here hitting the line, you're going to shut us up. So you lot get down that end of the pitch. This is where the cheaters are. Because they didn't want to be with young boys that were hitting lines on the shuttles the whole time because they were stopping short. They didn't want to be highlighted about it. So they're like, no, you guys get on that end. That's your end. We're at this end, we don't hit the line. So like, don't show us up. But you get to a game and they're just like, they turn it on. But it's just French.
Do they drink pre-game as well sometimes or not? Training?
Pre-game.
That's what Tom May said. They like training days, they used to be, as Stefan said, like
Tom
a
Tom May's looking for a headline. He's like covering the France-New Zealand game. That he's looking for
I've never seen that. I mean, the front row union would have like a little, you know, the little like tiny little glass of red after the team run, but they wouldn't go past that.
Little cigarette? Everyone's in the ciggies?
Yeah, man. Those boys love a dart.
I honestly,
are you back on the ciggies?
Yeah, I love a dart. Love going out. I mean, for me, I know a lot of children watch this. There's nothing wrong with a few darts on the Saturday night. I think it's a great
look. You loved it in France. You could smoke in the stadium, do you remember?
Yeah, I love smoking.
It's not Northcote Road uniform, I reckon.
It's all right. If you're with me, it's fine. I'll let you in. We have only got 5 minutes to go, Fred. So
yeah, don't worry. Just quickly, so obviously that was Racing. Was Grenoble worse? Or like that was maybe a mix of the two? But
Because
you only survived Grenoble for a year before you decided to get out of there. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that one was tough. Yeah, I mean, didn't get played. And then decided to, yeah. Well, actually, they decided that I should leave.
Really?
Did you mind not? I know it sounds a weird question, but, you know, obviously, someone of your caliber would be getting paid quite well, right? In these clubs, would it at that stage of your career, were you pissed off you weren't getting played, or were you kind of like, look, I'm probably coming to the end, you know? I know it's a strange question, but does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm waiting for that time in my career where I can get to the top and like do very little but pick up a massive paycheck, and I'm very happy with it.
That wasn't my plan to go there and pick up a massive paycheck and not do a lot. I really wanted to play, and I also love the way the French played rugby and the idea of being involved in that in the way I'd imagined it was really appealing to me, quite romantic for me. But it didn't turn out that way. I would love to have played more, but I didn't. I think the language was a huge issue for me at the start. I think adjusting to the way the French played with. In England, we'd have a lot of structure, which was then flexible in terms of how we played the game, but we didn't have that in France. I think I probably struggled with that quite a bit.
Yeah,
should have got some French lessons from Archie.
I mean, just to finish on that, I actually dated a South Korean girl who was like stunning. And like we, you know, I wanted to make it work, but the language barrier. Have you tried learning South Korean?
No,
bloody hard. Yeah. And I, you know, obviously, romantically, we clicked.
Yeah, yeah.
Physically.
In the bed.
Yeah. She was into what I was into.
Right, okay.
She, like, I... You,
you
know,
just couldn't speak.
Well, you know, she... You know, I was her first English guy.
What was she doing in England?
She was working for a tech company.
Right, okay.
Well, I don't really... I don't really know what she was doing because I didn't speak a word of South Korean. She didn't speak a word of English. But, I mean, we really, like, clicked physically and slept very well in the bed, but it's just very difficult. It's like, tough. Google Translate, it's like, it's good, but...
It's a bit exhausting.
Yeah, it's just hard.
Well, and, Bugs, yeah. Come on. A couple of quick fires. Toughest player you ever came against?
Toughest.
Yeah.
Tony Munger.
Chirpiest.
Owen Farrell. In his younger years, and if he's still like it now.
Oh, God, he is. I'm sure he is. We're going to finish off with chat or no chat, and then you're going to sing us out, right?
Should we just quickly, just because obviously...
Oh, no, sorry. We're going to do the rum. And then we're going to do... So what are you up to now? We forgot to ask, sorry. We should have booked 2 hours because you've got so many great stories, but to tell us what incredible rums are in front of us.
Mate, we, a friend of mine, Ed Jackson, some...
He's been on the podcast.
Has he?
Yeah. Ed's been on the podcast.
Great guy.
You don't remember, you were on the podcast when he came on the podcast. You were away.
Yeah, down in Cornwall.
Or
Portugal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he came on it from... Okay, nice.
Yeah. That was the early days, not when we were in the studio killing it. Which one's the spice one?
This was the spice one here.
Talk to us about it, Box.
Mate, we, Ed and I, just we locked down drunk after drinking rum for many years. We tried a lot more rums during lockdown, a lot of foreign rums, a lot of domestic rums, and we felt that there was a gap for a really, really well-made, traditionally crafted rum made start to finish in England. Lots of rums are, call themselves English, but they're chosen from distilleries in the islands. They're brought over, they're blended in Amsterdam, and they're bottled here and called English. And we wanted to make something that was wholeheartedly English from the start to finish. So it's fermented, distilled, bottled in our distillery in Cornwall.
Giddy will be happy.
And we spent about 2 years developing the recipe. It wasn't something that we just kind of outsourced and then just picked it. We kind of spent about 26 iterations later liquid. So we've very much been part of the process, developing it from start to finish, which has been painstaking. But we're really, really proud of it. We have a spice rum and a gold rum.
This is generally really nice. It's great, just neat.
So smooth.
Yeah, we designed it to be drunk. Like, so it's made from all natural ingredients, all natural botanicals. We bring in the molasses, bring in the yeast. Everything is made from scratch. So it's like, it's a handcrafted small batch process. So it's like painstaking, but it gives us a great rum.
It's worth it. Tastes amazing.
And it's low in cal.
It's very low in cal, yeah.
You'll be on that all night.
I will be. I know that people would say this because you're in the room and you'd have to say this, but this is tasty. I'm not a big rum drinker. No. I'm more like tequila, lime and soda water because it's low in cal. Yeah. And I like tasting. My favourite food is like a boiled egg, boiled chicken and a florette of broccoli. So, but this is actually really good.
So we'll link that in the bio because people will get
Where can you buy it? Like you can get it where?
Yeah, you can buy it on our website on vaporrum.com. And you can buy it. We're moving into across sort of like certain venues around London and England at the moment. So it's if you want to buy it online, vaporrum.com is the best place to buy it.
Beautiful. Right, we're going to finish off with Chat or No Chat. And then you're going to sing one comment. We're going to sing Barks Out. Let's do Chat or No Chat quickly. You tell us if they've got Chat or No Chat, and we're going to finish up. Johnny Wilkinson.
Chat.
Ian Bolshaw.
Chat.
Dave Flatman.
Chat.
Tyndall.
Chat.
Ben Keller.
No chat, but I appreciate it.
Charlie Hodgson?
No chat. Chat.
Joe Worsley?
No chat.
Steve Borthwick?
No chat.
Andy Farrell?
No chat.
And Matt Stevens?
Chat.
Too much chat.
Right, come on.
Right, Bucks. Now, this is the way, because obviously the podcast has upped its game and we're running out of time.
Yeah,
but anyway, what we want people to do is like, subscribe and comment. It's one of those things, I don't know if you hear it on podcasts, but the podcast, actually, we're recording this the day after the first podcast, and what we're going to do is sing the comments of people leave on the podcast, but we haven't done that. But last week we had Hannah Botterman, who's a World Cup winner. Do you remember her?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, she's great. And we released a video, and I'm just going to sing all the comments that were left on that video. Some really interesting people that weren't aware of the Rugbyers podcast.
Or myself. Are we
about to get chat out? Okay, hold on. Here we go. Let me just get the clip up. I'm just going to read the comments.
A bit faster?
So I just want to say to everybody who's been on the podcast, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow. It's really important. Let's start. So Beverly Ampack, she said, Matt Peck, can we watch this later? Bargu said, you are such an inspiration to have you part of the team. I said, thank you, I appreciate it. She wrote, not talking to you, I'm talking to Hannah. I said, okay, fuck off. She said, unsubscribed, that's your loss. CW_badass. Hannah Botterman is brilliant, so down to earth, strong and such a good role model to young girls. God, I wish I'd been there. Women like her on the screens. I was such a kid of growing up. Just strong, inspirational, funny women. I said thank you to her. She said, no, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about Hannah Botterman. I said, then unsubscribe.
One more.
then Snoop Frog plus one with a blue tick. He's only got 150 followers. It was pretty weird. Said yes at Hannah Bottoman. It will be boring as fuck. Don't ever change, girl. We fucking love you. And I said, you need to get alive.
Guys, thank you so much for listening.
That really worked, that section.
I think we got to work on it a bit.
I need to work on it because the tune was all right.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, the guitar was all right.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys, don't forget
to like, share, subscribe, comment. We'll see you all again next week with an incredible guest. Until then, Barks, good luck with everything. And we're going to get a lot of people buying that incredibly delicious rum.
Thank you, Paul. More less, I need more.